For more than a decade, we've hosted Writing Excuses at Sea, an annual workshop and retreat on a cruise ship. You're invited to our final cruise in 2026. It's a chance to learn, connect, and grow, all while sailing along the stunning Alaskan and Canadian coast. Join us, the hosts of Writing Excuses, and spend dedicated time leveling up your writing craft. Attend classes, join small group breakout sessions, learn from instructors one-on-one at office hours, and meet with other writers from around the world. During the week-long retreat, we'll also dock at three Alaskan ports, Juneau, Sitka, and Skagway, as well as Victoria, British Columbia. Use this time to write on the ship or choose excursions that allow you to get up close and personal with glaciers, go whale watching, and learn more about the rich history of the region, and more. Next year will be our grand finale after over 10 years of successful retreats at sea. Whether you're a longtime alumni or a newcomer, we would love to see you on board. Early bird pricing is currently available, and we also offer scholarships. You can learn more at writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 20, Episode 42. This is Writing Excuses.
Aaron's personal writing process.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Dan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
And I have been apprehensive about this episode since we decided to do it, because I feel like my writing process is like a bunch of random practices thrown into a bag and shaken up. And then every so often I reach in and see what's working for me or what's not. But you may also be like this and not have a completely organized idea of your writing process. So hopefully this is helpful. And I have organized it in my head into four categories, because I do still like to be slightly organized, which is... this is all part of my writing process.
Outline
grab bag,
which is getting work, getting in, getting done, and getting right. So those are basically, how do I manage my sort of business creative life? How do I start writing? How do I stop writing and turn something in? And how do I live a balanced life? And because I am a game writer, I'm gonna let y'all pick which one you want to hear about.
I just want to say a thing first, which is, this is not me calling you out, but I do think that there is a thing where I have had a similar conversation with a lot of writers where they're like, oh, I don't have a process. I don't know what I'm doing or whatever it is. And then as soon as you start talking to them, it's like, no, there are these things. You are doing this thing. And I think, you know, one thing that I was excited to sort of talk about this with Erin after she was like, I don't have a process. I don't know what we're talking about in this episode. Is I think that's how most people feel. You know, I think we're only able to talk about this in a really cogent way right now because we're doing the work that Aaron just described of sitting down and being like, okay, what chaotic things do I do and how do I explain them? And then when you explain it, it looks more cogent and coherent, right? But I think the process of looking at it is the thing that makes it sound like a thing. I think for a lot of us, it really is instinctual or habitual or whatever it is. So if you're listening to these episodes and being like, well, I don't have a thing like Mary Robinette does, then I think that's totally fine. And you just find it as you go.
So, absolutely makes sense.
So since you gave us four things and you said it's like a game, I am rolling a die and it is number one.
Okay, getting work. So that is... Thank you. I love that we gamified it. you can listen to this out of order. No, just kidding. So getting work. And it's funny because I think we have an episode coming up that's about business of writing. As someone who makes a living essentially writing, like everything I do is writing, which I think is what makes it difficult to think about the writing process, because I do freelance writing for games. I do my own prose writing. I do script writing, I do video game writing, it's all writing, you know, and even though some of it is for direct cash, like you paid me to write this thing, and some of it is my own work, it all comes from the creative part of my brain. And so it's hard for me sometimes to separate one from the other, but I have to, because otherwise I will get lost. So I have a lot of things that I do in order to figure out, should I take on a project? How do I manage the projects that I have in front of me? And like, you know, how do I know what I need to do on any given day? To figure out if I should take on a project, because a big mistake you can make, I think, in no matter what you're doing, is to overcommit yourself to things, because it's hard to say no when things sound really cool. But you are better off saying no, or saying even, I can't right now, can I get back to you? Or could we do this another time? Or I can't, you know, at the moment, then saying yes, and then being like, I haven't slept in a year, and this is not great. I'm now hallucinating things, which is what happens when you don't sleep for too long. So
this
I have
something that you have personal experience with.
I don't. I never hallucinate anything. One time in college, I didn't sleep for several days and thought everything that started with the letter P was very funny for reasons that I don't understand to this day. Mm-hmm. But so I use an Airtable which I've talked about, I think, on the podcast before, which is basically fancy Excel. And I actually keep like a running tab of every project I have, how many words it is, when it's due, including my own personal projects. Like, I think this story is going to be 6,000 words and I'd like to get it done by June 1st or whatever it is. And then I have them all like in different categories and with different tags on them. This is also how I track, have I gotten paid? Have I put this on my taxes? Did I sign the contract? Because I am my own assistant. And so I have like writing time where I'm writing and assistant time where I'm assisting myself to write. And so I keep it all on a big spreadsheet. And when somebody says, do you want to do this project? I look and I say, based on this deadline, do I have enough hours in the day to get this done?
I'm just going to keep roasting you for the fact that Mr. I Don't Have a Project has a custom Airtable to track word counts, deadlines, and sequence, and whether you paid your taxes on it.
Yeah.
This is incredible. This is such a useful framework.
It's messy. It makes you feel better. The spreadsheet could be better organized.
I promise you that this is 10,000 times more organized than 95% of writers.
I literally wrote down, ask Aaron for Airtable.
I don't have a process.
I love that you're starting with this, though, because it's such like a useful thing to keep in mind, right? Because I think so many writers, when taking on projects, aren't keeping an eye on the business side of it, right? When I say business side of it, I don't even necessarily mean the like negotiation or whatever, right? But in terms of, can I get this deliverable to them on the schedule they're asking for? Can I do the word count that they're asking for? And have I been paid for this? Like, just being able to keep an eye on that like freelancer mindset of how do I slot this into my schedule is really hard and really difficult. And it's really hard to say no to stuff, right? Like, I go through this all the time with clients who, you know, are under contract for the book, but then like Star Wars comes knocking. How do you say no? You know what I mean? And the answer is you say no because you're going to do a bad job on both projects if you say yes, right? And so I think it's really, really difficult and really hard to learn to say no, but it's also very important. And the other kind of note of caution I would love to throw in there is, there's a thing that I see that's like, I consider the danger zone, which is when you get into that, like, well, what if we push the deadline by 2 weeks? Could you do it then? And it's like, it's easy to say yes. You're going to want to say yes at that point, but really you need to be real about the fact that what you need is 6 more weeks, not 2 more weeks. Right. And so I think that like trying to fit stuff in too tightly and trying to slot stuff into your process in this really constrained way will lead to a danger zone as well when considering, can I take this project on?
Question, does your spreadsheet track like historically how long it took you to do a thing, so that, you know, you've got the whole, can I take this job? I think it'll take this long. And then you circle back and do a postmortem and say, hey, you know what? I actually was spot on with that guess. It took me exactly 3 weeks. Or, oh gosh, I underestimated it.
So yes and no. So yes, in the sense that I actually have fields for all of that include things like a star rating for like how I felt about the project.
And so what you're saying is,
I don't fill them out because I'm behind.
You've asked the same question I've asked,
yes.
And the answer is Not yet, but I have room for it.
I do have room for it. I'm excited about the star ratings that are like how I felt about, like, how did I feel about the project on three? So there's, okay, there's a thing with freelancing.
Do you have multiple star rating categories, or is it just one rating?
No, it's a multiple ratings, because there's a thing.
You're so disorganized. It's embarrassing. This is turning into a four episode because we're only going to get through this one first step. All right, keep going.
There's a thing in freelancing where they say, like, you can be, there are three things that you should be: on time, good with your work, and pleasant to work with. And I also think that is true of the people you work with. You can do two out of three. If you miss the third one, it probably shouldn't be nice to work with, because that's the people don't like you. They don't like you. But at the end, so what I want to do with my star system is, one is like, how were they to work with? One is, how did I feel about my timeliness? And how did I feel about the actual strength of my work? Mm. So if I felt like I was on time and they were great, but like I did a poor job with this, because turns out I'm not great at writing about 18 forms of geese monsters, then in the future, I will be like, another goose monster project, maybe not for me. And so that's how I learn, like, the type of work that I like to do, in addition to how much I can do. And like, is this somebody I don't want to return to because they pay slow, they're mean, they yelled at me that time, they sent a goose after me, a physical goose.
Mm-hmm. That would be a one-star rating for me. If you sent a goose to my house, I'd be no stars.
That's amazing.
Does it depend on the kind of goose, though? I mean, like, if it was a rare...
No, all goose are mean.
Okay.
Yeah. I think this is also an important lesson embedded in here, though, which is, you know, you can have these systems, but also you're only going to use the stuff that is...
Like, immediately
you're
useful.
Always going to want to put more options in there, but the stuff that's actually useful is the stuff you're going to use, right? If that makes sense. Like, I think it'd be really cool to have that data, but clearly it's also like, oh, I don't have time to think about that. I'll do that later, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like at the end of the year, I'll do it, but I don't.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier when you were talking about saying no to work. Sometimes you can delay. You can ask to delay and say, I'm very interested in this, but I don't have time. Can we come back a few months later? Because I've been in this situation, and I know that very often the should I take this decision is not made on how much time I have, but it's made on how much money I need.
Yeah.
And if I am really hard up for money, my dumb kids keep wanting to eat all the time, I am a lot more likely to say yes to stuff. And knowing that you have the freedom to push back a little and say, I'm very excited about this, I would love to do it, can I do it in 6 months, is a really smart and important thing to be able to say.
Yeah. And I was shocked the first time I asked somebody and they were like, yeah, sure, I don't care. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, it feels like they're like the powerful, great and magnificent Oz. And like, you know, but it turns out there's just a person back there who's also dealing with their own deadlines and their own life. And they understand. You know, I think this is something that being a teacher helped with, because when my students want extensions, I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Just get it to me in a reasonable time that I can do what I need to do. But I just made up this deadline because, like, it made sense for me at the time I made it up. So it's nice to be flexible. Mm-hmm. And with that, now that we've done three of the four, just kidding, go to the break.
If you've spent any time around me, you've probably noticed that coffee is very central to my life. I'm rarely far from a cup of, frankly, whatever's available. But while I'll take what I can get, I do have opinions, strong ones, about what makes a great cup. If you haven't tried an AeroPress coffee yet, you're in for a treat. AeroPress uses a completely unique brew method, and because of that, you get a completely unique and exceptionally delicious cup of coffee that you can only get with an AeroPress. As someone who's on the road a lot, it's a great solution to get consistently great coffee where you usually can't get it. Hotel rooms, road trips, camping, backpacking. I've taken one lots of places. It's lightweight, easy to pack, and sturdy. But more to the point, it makes consistently great coffee that lets the lighter notes in the beans shine through. It's a little bit like a pour-over, a little bit like a French press, and a little bit of espresso. If you like a lighter or more complex roast, an AeroPress is a great solution at home or on the go. AeroPress is shockingly affordable, less than $50, and we've got an incredible offer for our audience. Visit aeropress.com/WX. That's AeroPress.com/WX, and use the promo code WX to save 20% off your order. That's aeropress.com/WX, and be sure to use code WX at checkout to save 20%. It's time to ditch the drive-thru, toss the French press, and say yes to better mornings fueled by better coffee. Aeropress ships to the U.S. and over 60 countries around the world, and we thank them for sponsoring our show. The holidays sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high-quality, unique, and often handmade or at least made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, and because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out fast. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard football fans, to foodies and mixologists and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/WX. That's uncommongoods.com/WX for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Okay, so I think we covered getting work,
And I've
which
rolled
is great.
The die again, so now we're on number four.
Getting right. Yeah, this is about like having a personal life. So the downside of getting work, this is like the underside of that sandwich, is that it can sometimes be hard to leave your work behind if you are me and leave the house. I think this is, I'm sure there are people who are saying like, how can you leave your responsibilities behind? I have kids, I have, you know, troublesome work, I have a spouse, I have all these things. I'm a single old cat lady that they warn you about on the internet. And the good side of that is that I have a lot of time to write. And the bad side of that is that I can only write and I could like never go out. And so I think it's just important to, for myself, think about my gravestone. That's going to sound bad. But like I like to think on my gravestone, will they say she worked a lot? Like she was a really hard worker. And so sometimes I will prioritize a personal experience that I cannot have again. Especially if it, like if it's a friend who I could see in 3 days, I might say, hey, I really have this deadline. But if someone's coming into town, if I'm at a convention and having a really great conversation with someone I will never, never see again, I think it's better to have the life experience than to have the work experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you pay the price for that or you're up late the next night. But I found that like I am a better writer when I interact with humanity. When I don't become like someone who like has no knowledge of the world. One thing that I was thinking about when we were talking about all the birds in the sky is the idea at the end of the book that the people who are running the magic side, to become really good at magic, you have to become really divorced from humanity, which is why the solution they come up with to save the world is basically to make all humans hate each other. And it's like, I don't want to become that kind of magician. Yeah. Like it's not worth, like the juice isn't worth the squeeze at that point. And so I think sometimes deadlines can feel so imminent. They can, everything can feel like it's waiting, it's weighing on you. I often like to say from a friend of mine who worked in public relations, it's PR, not the ER, which is like, you know, like we're not, we're saving lives, but we're not saving lives, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that like trying to keep that perspective is something that is really important to me and that I want other people to do as well.
There will be a lot of things in the books business that will want to make you, or writing business generally, that wants to make you feel like it is a crisis and it is immediate and urgent. But at the end of the day, there's very little that is actually a thing that needs to be solved this instant.
I will say that one of the things that I have been struck by when listening to you talk about, I go out and I do these things, is the number of times that I have gone out with you and you have brought work with you to the bar, but which is also like, roasting you a little bit, but also it's it is sometimes it's both. I know that when I've been on a deadline, sometimes the thing that I've done is I've arranged for when I was building puppets, I'm like, hey, do you want to come over and do crafting while I'm building this thing? And so we can still socialize while that's happening. Or coffee shop dates. We get the socializing done. We both get work done. So sometimes you can actually blend them and do both of them.
Douglas Adams said, I love deadlines. I love the whooshing sound they make as they go by. And, you know, for 20 years, Schlock Mercenary was never late. You know, online, every day, new comic strip for 20 years. That did not mean that I did not miss some deadlines. There were lots of things that I missed deadlines for. And I feel like the knowing that there's a deadline and knowing you have to have a life, it might not be a bad idea for an early career writer to just experience pushing back on a deadline or missing a deadline and discovering, hey, it made a whooshing sound and I lived. But don't pick one that you're going to get fired for.
Yeah, and warn people that you're going
to
miss it.
This is what I'm saying. Here's the important thing. If you're going to miss a deadline, tell them early.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things, if you tell me early that your book is going to be late, I can go and solve all those problems. If you wait till the day the thing is due and then you tell me it's late, everything else is locked. We've locked the season, the cover's in, blah, blah, blah's in. You know what I mean? And then things get very hard and expensive to move, and then people are pissed.
And also it messes with the lives of other freelancers because copy editors who've held space in their schedule to copy edit for you now aren't getting paid because your work is late. And then when it comes in, their schedule is... But if you let people know, everyone can adjust.
And I will say that I think people always say this, and it is true. But I think from the internal side, it never happens that way. No one thinks, I will wait to the last minute to tell people I will be late.
Yep.
What happens is you get into a cycle of like optimism and shame, where you wake up optimistic that today you will suddenly write 10,000 million words. Like, because you're like, if I just get in the zone, if I just do everything perfectly, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine, fine, fine. Mm-hmm. And then as the day goes on, you're like, oh my God, it was not fine. Things happened. I needed to eat lunch at one point. Why did I do it? And then you think, oh my gosh, I'm so ashamed. I don't want to say like I'm failing. Maybe tomorrow I'll fix it and I'll be the person. I'll be the best million person version of myself. And I think you can get into that cycle until the point that you actually hit the deadline, at which point then you're sending like really sad emails being like, I don't know, I thought I was going to do it. And it is really hard to give yourself permission to tell people how you're doing along the way and say like, hey, I think there might be a problem here. I'm going to try to catch up, but it's possible that there may be a delay, even if you need to couch it that way so that they understand what's going on and you're not like a black box where you're like, I just think, you know, we all want to be the best versions of ourselves. But, you know, the idea that like you will be hit perfection every day just because you have to, it may not happen. And if it does happen, you may not like the way it feels.
Yeah, I have a spreadsheet that I use when I'm writing to deadline, which is, I know. But the thing that it tells me is whether or not I'm on target to hit the deadline. Because I know for myself that I lose track of time, that I am not a good judge. And so I've created a tool that allows me to externalize that instead of relying on my own impulses. So I can see, oh, you're dropping off. And that helps me do a little bit more early warning.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a great online tool for that as well. I just wanted to say called Pacer.
Oh, cool.
That actually allows you to set like what your goal is. And then you can set several ways. You can be like, I like to start strong and then finish whatever, or this weekend I actually can't work at all, and it will actually give you how much word count you should do each day.
Oh my goodness.
Based on that system. So I just wanted to throw that out there. It's really fun.
Yeah.
So we've talked about finding work, and we've talked about finding yourself after work, and you've beautifully dodged the question of how do you actually work?
So number two?
Yes, getting
can
in.
Can we lightning round these last
yes,
two?
Yes, these two are going to go so fast. I'm sorry.
No, I was like, no, yeah, I think so we're just really doing an extra long episode on this one. Yeah, this
awesome.
Is great.
Let's do it.
All right, getting in and getting done. So these are kind of two of the same coin. But getting in, for me, something I've learned is that I need to hook myself into something in order to be able to write it. Like hooking a fish. I've never gone fishing in my life, but I hear hooks are involved. So I'm going to use that as a metaphor. So also like save the fish at the end, I guess. But so like if it is a piece of prose, it is usually the hook of voice. If I don't understand the character's voice, it is really difficult for me to write the story. A lot of, I actually don't have that thing that Dan talked about on another episode about like where the character is running away with you. But I do feel like if I can't feel like I'm listening to the character tell the story or I'm helping them tell the story, then it's just like words and it doesn't have any meaning to it. And so I spend a lot of time just trying to find the hook, rewriting the first page, rewriting the first page again, trying this other way. So I do a lot of work on the like early side of things, trying to get myself hooked in. And at points I was like, this is not, you know, why am I wasting so much time on this? But it turns out that if I try to push myself past it, then I end up coming back to the beginning, but just like 16 pages later being like, I hate this whole story.
What I love about this is we talk a lot about trying to hook the reader, and you're talking about how you need to hook yourself first, mm-hmm. right? If you're not excited about it, how can you ask anyone else to be excited yeah. about it? So I love that that's a great place to start in terms of like, how do you find the thing that's exciting to you and get you engaged with it? And then that'll tell you what you need to know for down the line when you're like, okay, now how do I get readers excited?
So do you have tricks or writing exercises or something like that to help you find that voice or find that hook that you love about the story?
I think there are two things that I do. One is that I will often go back and write an earlier part, like a big moment in my character's life that doesn't appear on the page of the story, because it will help me understand them. Mm. Your voice is strongest when you're like at a time of emotional crisis. But in a story, you usually don't start in emotional crisis because it's like, why? There's nowhere to go from there. And so I will write the story where the person is like, if I'm like, this person is a kleptomaniac. Well, I'm like, well, when did they steal for the very first time? Mm-hmm. And why? You know, this person has an anger management problem. What's a time they were really, really angry? And like, what were they angry about? And a lot of times that will get me the voice. And then I can take the voice once I have it and translate it. I also talk to my cat a lot. This helps me hook, I think, a little bit more when it comes to game writing and nonfiction, where mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of an idea. So when I'm doing game writing and they're like, okay, write a city, and I've read up the type of city that I'm writing, I will like bounce ideas off by just saying them out loud. I mean, like, okay, what if it was a city where everyone was inside out? Oh no, that might be confusing. What if it was a city filled with geese? Like, okay, ooh, that might be cool. Like, what would that be like? And I'll just talk to my cat and like try to explain it to her. Because sometimes when you say things out loud, they just don't sound as good as they did in your head. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to inflicting them on my friends, I will usually first inflict them on my cat and then maybe a friend. Like I'll say, I'm thinking about doing this idea if it's not something under NDA, like, and just say it to them. And in the process of saying it, I can mm-hmm. tell if it's wrong or it's right.
There's this whole debugging method for coders called the rubber duck method,
yeah. mm-hmm.
which is explain the problem to something inanimate and you'll probably find the solution.
Honestly, the thing that I do when I need to rubber duck it is because I'm on the West Coast, I'm often up after my friends are. So I would just pick a friend and text them a stream of ideas.
You are a bad friend. That's they have to read that.
Then at the end of the day, ignore all this. You don't have to read it.
Yeah, but they've already read through it. Yeah. But I also do a similar thing, but I will interrogate it on the page. Because if I start talking to Elsie, she will start talking back, and that's not useful.
But, that's why I didn't teach my cat to talk.
I know.
Choices I thought
were made.
About it. But.
Yeah. So once you've got the hook, do you have to continue to rehook yourself every day that you're working on a project? Or is it really that once you get into it, you're kind of in and going?
Once I'm in it, I'm in, because I will read what I have written previously. Mm-hmm. And that will get me like in, like I'm like, okay, oh yes, this is exactly the way this person talks. Like it's like talking, it's kind of like when you talk to a friend and they're like, oh, this is the way that their speech goes. And right. you're like, oh yes, I'm in it again. And then I can usually hurdle myself forward, headlight rider style, for a while until I run into like, there is no plot, or like something needs to happen. And like, at that point, a lot of it is just like trying to think of like 8 different things that could happen. Or I actually have a lot of tabletop solo role-playing games that are about creating interesting ideas or like what could possibly happen in the world. And sometimes I'll use those just as a prompt. And even though I don't keep what I came up with, like sometimes even reacting and being like, it couldn't be that, will help me to figure it out. A lot of things I also do to keep myself engaged is whatever the premise was of the story that I found was really interesting. Like, this is a world filled with geese. Like, I'm like, oh, yes, it is a world filled with geese. What else do geese do? Like, let me go read up on geese. Oh, they honk a lot and chase you. Oh, I don't have a chase scene in this. I should have my character chased by a goose. This is great. Like, this will give it something to do. So if I go back to the origin story of my story, like, a lot of times that's a way to kind of keep me going. And then to kind of get into the third one and the final one, which is getting done, it can be, if you're somebody like me, I like to revise as I go. It's easy to get stuck with, like, the perfect story in the front, like, business in the front, not party in the back. It's bad, you know? So it's like, don't pay attention.
Yeah, Zoom hair.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it is like a Zoom outfit. You're like, it's great from the waist up, but what's going on? What's these pajama pants? So figuring out, like, how to keep going. And that is where deadlines are helpful, because sometimes the perfectionism of wanting to get the exact right cadence of one sentence is holding me back from finishing. Mm. So having some sort of deadline. This is why I like applying to fellowships, because fellowships are an artificial deadline that want your work. And it usually has to be recent work. So I'll be like, oh, I would love to go to McDowell. Like, let me see what their deadline is. And I actually put that on my spreadsheet with everything else so that I know what that deadline is and treat it the way that I would treat an employer, so that that way I'm finishing my story, like, at a good time. I think the last thing that's a random writing process of mine is having Microsoft Word read my stories to me, because... A downside of being a voicey cadence person is I can talk myself into liking a story more than it should be liked by, like, doing that spoken word thing where you just make everything sound really deep, but it's not. Not that all spoken word is that way, but we've all been there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You know that thing about words where they're stupid?
No, it's true. Like, as a narrator, like, one of my jobs is making bad things sound good and not... It, like, sometimes it's unfortunately true, but I have learned that I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are books that you have not told us about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But Microsoft Word lady won't do that. She's horrible. Her sense of when to put a pause in is bad. And so but she still sounds friendly. She's, like, friendly but badly reading your story.
Yeah.
And so, like, I love to put her on as I go. Like, if I finished a section, I'll go get a snack while I have her read the whole story to me in the background. Mm-hmm. And hear, like, is there something that I feel like I'm bouncing off of? It could just be that she didn't do a great job, but a lot of times it's that there's something there that isn't quite working. And then I can identify it. And when I get back to my desk, fix it and then have her read it to me again. If I could get my cat to read my stories to me, that would be ideal. But it has not happened yet.
Teaching cats to read, I think, would be a mistake.
Yeah.
I think.
And now this episode has gone on forever, so
I hope we've all enjoyed this stealth announcement for Untitled Goose Game 2.
Homework, put geese in it. No, that's not the actual homework. Yeah. So feel free.
Thank you for letting us know about how you don't have any process at all. I feel very reassured about that. Do you have homework?
I do have homework, which is, I think, what really helped me in sounding like I have more process than I feel like I have is writing down all the tips and tricks that are things that I do. Oh, the one last one I didn't mention is sometimes you just need to go to sleep. That's going to sound weird, but if you're late trying to work on something, like, I find sometimes it's better to nap for 2 hours and come back to it than attempt to push through, because your brain just shuts down.
Yeah.
Your brain needs to break.
It's like, your brain's like, nah, just give me a rest. But I think write down things that you do, things that you are, like, that have worked for you, any tip or trick that has ever resonated with you, put them all on a page and then see, like, is there anything cool about that page? And if nothing else, at least now you've got it all written down somewhere.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go organize your writing process, maybe.
With a spreadsheet.
And a goose.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.